Michaela Ladi and Dimitris Tsaroukas for inviting me to this panel. I will try to answer only a few of the questions Stelen and Dimitris have posed to us, and I will focus on the question of problems of implementation of public policy in Southern Europe. Let me just say in advance that I will not touch upon an issue which we may want to discuss, which is perceptions of self-perceptions of South Europeans about their countries, which I find very critical, and related to this, the stereotypes about the South of Europe, which have flourished again since the beginning of this year. Okay, I don't touch upon this, but I wish we could discuss it. So, core public policy areas. Some areas where South European governments have placed an emphasis are building democratic institutions, agriculture, tourism, infrastructure, regional development, housing, and less so pensions and education. This is a general statement which tries to cover the question, what were the policy priorities of South European governments over the last 30 years? Please add to this the very obvious priority, which was redistribution, and to a certain extent, particularly in Spain, Portugal and Greece until the beginning of the 1980s, and then the priority of macroeconomic stabilization. Areas which have not been awarded priority, and again I'm making a vast generalization, are employment, social assistance and care, public administration. And this excludes decentralization, which has progressed in Italy and in Spain, and also taxation, state revenue, energy and environmental protection, ICT and migration policies. These are policies which, in my view, have not been elaborated and have not been prioritized. Let me move to all the new challenges, because there was a question addressed to us by Stella and by Dimitris asking what happened after 2008. Well, we have a shift of focus, not to the neglected policy areas which I mentioned, but to fiscal policy and to endangered sectors such as construction. The fact that South European countries are under a crisis now, most of all Greece and Portugal rather than Spain and Italy, is not a new development. We have had national and governance failures in Greece this time and earlier also in 1989 and 1990, and in Italy in 1992-1994. More concretely, examples of failure include the underperformance of central public administration and also of secondary and higher education, the dismal state of social assistance and public health care, the environmental protection and town planning, and of course the big fiscal problems. However, let us not forget that Europeanization has played a role. We see, I think, a positive impact of Europeanization, perhaps not as vast as many commentators believe. Still, we have a contribution of the integration of the four countries in the EU in terms of consolidating their democracies and the stability of the political system, of their political systems. Also, we have the contribution of the European Union to economic stabilization through the EMU, the liberalization of banking and telecommunication sectors, and the rising living standards, which many people tend to forget. And all this is owed to economic growth sustained by domestic demand and also to funding through the community support frameworks, which were mentioned extensively by José. South European economic and political systems overall have converged with the rest of the European Union if one takes the long-term perspective, namely the last 30 years. What are the main obstacles to implementation? These are obstacles which I would like to focus on. And the explanation which you usually find is that there's a high political cost. Political elites do not want to take such a cost. I think we should go beyond this. At the heart of the problem, in my view, is to look at the historical legacies which obstruct reform. I will not go through this because it's very well known to you, various approaches in political science, not in South European comparative studies, which discuss why implementation fails. And you just remember rational choice, historical institutionalism, political economy approaches, policy style, and also the varieties of capitalism, which is down here. However, I tried to look at more concrete approaches, and I found a study by the OECD published only 1 year ago, which is not about Southern Europe, but mentions conditions which could facilitate reform in general, and this is a study based on empirical cases. And I think we could apply these conditions in regard to failure of implementation of policy reforms in Southern Europe. So to have good chances for implementation, one should fulfill, a government should try to fulfill all these conditions, electoral mandate to reform, effective communication, preparation of the reform in terms of solid database, elaboration of the changes, long gestation time, cohesion of government which attempts reform, firmness of leadership, erosion of the status quo, and persistence of the reform effort despite initial failure. By now you must be very pessimistic because these 8 conditions are very difficult to fulfill. So I switch to my own bottom-to-top analysis, namely an effort to try to see why in practice reform has failed in various cases in Southern Europe. And I have 10 instances where I think we find reform failure. First is a resistance by a coalition of popular interests. By popular interests, I mean low and middle class, very well organized interest groups. You have also resistance by powerful social economic elites. People mention the power of liberal professions like the medical doctors, or people mention businessmen who have very good links with the central and regional state authorities. Resistance by national or subnational institutions. You have regulatory authorities and regional authorities which may play a role in the lack of implementation. You have the judicial amendment of a policy measure. And of course you have indifference on the part of policy users, as analysts of social policy reforms in Southern Europe have shown. Namely, South Europeans do not take up benefits in some cases. And I move to my second similar slide, which is referring to the same series of problems usually leading to lack of implementation: bureaucratic obstruction, underfunding or depletion of available funds, lack of expertise among those entrusted with policy implementation, government change or management turnover, which is very fast or affects even state-run or state-owned organizations rather than simply the leadership of ministries. And finally, the rejection of the reform by international actors. For instance, if a reform runs against EU legislation, then implementation will not follow. By now, I think I have answered the question, is there a specific approach we need for Southern Europe? No, I think these 10 causes of implementation failure may be of general value if one tries to use them as hypotheses for research. If we want to focus on Southern Europe, I would like to submit to you that the historical legacies approach seems interesting, because we have polarized political competition regardless of the effacement of the old divide between left and right. This divide is still there because we all know how strong left-wing parties, and we all have witnessed the rise of far-right, extreme-right parties as well. But even in cases where you have two large coalitions of parties in Southern Europe, the competition remains very, very polarized. And you also have a corresponding culture of distrust towards institutions. Previous speakers, Jakind and Jose, mentioned the case of weak state capacities. And also I would like to add to this analysis the exclusionary intervention of the state in society, systematically favoring some interests at the expense of the others. This has been mentioned again, but let me stress that it's not only public sector workers who have benefited for a long time from this state intervention, but also business elites which are state-dependent and liberal professionals. conclusions, I think we need to discuss the possibilities of implementation, success, in three different time frameworks. The first is the short term, the second is the medium term, and the last is the long term. So in the short term, we need institutional engineering to establish some of the conditions of the OECD study I mentioned before. In the medium term, we need systemic shifts to gradually alter the historical legacies I have outlined. And in the long term, we need public deliberation and planning to address the big issues of the coming decade. Which are the big issues in the next decade, okay, from 2011 to 2020? If you look at most analysis of by experts, also by journalists, you look at the familiar South European problems. Corruption, patronage, unemployment, of course. Recently people have added the inefficiency of the justice system, and also the familiar problems of low investment in research and development mentioned by the previous speakers, and the absence of entrepreneurship, and again some people talk about the very rigid labor markets, although one should add that there are very flexible labor markets in the underground, the shadow economy, where people lose their jobs, have no protection, so on and so forth. Instead of a listing for you and simply reproducing this list, I thought I should look at what is my own very, very subjective understanding of the future challenges. And the first one is the rising migration and immigration and then integration of incoming migrants, particularly in Southern Europe. The second is the return to economic dependency, of which there is a possibility, the possibility that South European countries, more Greece than the rest, may simply become countries depending only on providing one service, which is tourism, which will lead to the economic dependency we haven't thought for a long time now. And another challenge is what will happen to the agricultural sector and the large share of the population still working in rural areas after 2013, when the CAP, the Common Agricultural Policy, will radically be changed. And environmental degradation, which is obvious all around, you don't have to be an expert to look at this. And then the poverty and new inequalities, again, previous speakers have talked about this, but I want to mention that there is some research showing that the income inequality indeed is very high, yet we haven't discussed wealth inequality, assets held by people, inequalities within occupational groups, you know, well-placed lawyers versus lawyers who never make a good salary income, or public sector employees which are paid very highly compared to public sector employees which are on fixed term or non-renewable contracts. And inequalities, of course, among the young and the older generation. Thank you very much. I will not go on to the issue of the flourishing stereotypes about Southern Europe, but I'm sure you have been flooded since last December by this.